Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
I'm just saying to be super focused on being the best steelhead guide I could be. And that was a mistake. That was a huge mistake to give up all that. I can't get that time back. My grandfather died. I missed time. My dad said a bed once enough. My dad said it best. Once enough, enough. I'm really proud of what you've done, but once enough, enough. Like, when are you going to do the things that you used to do?
That was Greg Senyo getting real with it and talking about the impact of fly fishing on his life. This is the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today. We'll help you on your fly fishing journey with classic stories covering steelhead fishing, fly tying, and much more.
Hey, how's it going today? Thanks for stopping by the Fly Fishing Show. I'd love it if you could leave some feedback for the podcast or a question if you have one for the show. You can head over to wetflyswing.com/speak. to leave a voice message to get your question or comment, maybe even answered on the show. If you have one, that'd be amazing if you had time to do that. Greg Senyo, the man behind Laser Dub and the leader in the Steelhead Alley area, shares his story of how it all came to be. We find out about the man behind Hairline and the person who helped him elevate his game over there. We dig into a little on stripping streamers for Steelhead. And we find out as we take a step back on the fly fishing industry and just get a little deeper dive into Greg's perspective on it. So pretty good stuff. A few F-bombs in here. So just a heads up if you have kids listening. I wanted to give you let you know you've been warned. Hey, before we get started, I just want to take a moment to thank our sponsor for this episode, the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. Is our sponsor, and they're doing a great job over there. If you want to check out what they have going, head over to wetflyswing.com/FTJ and see what the newest edition is right now. So without further ado, here is Greg Senyo from GregSenyoFlyTying.com. How's it going, Greg?
Good, man. How are you? Thanks for having me today.
Yeah. I appreciate you taking the time. This has been good. I've had you on the list for quite a while. It's one of those things where sometimes I'll reach out to somebody and I'll just be like, okay, they're there. And then I don't know how long it was. I think you lost track of me on Facebook, but it's great because you reached out and said, yeah, let's do it. So I'm pretty fired up to get started.
Yeah, I didn't, I haven't been checking my messages on Facebook, and like, I guess there's like another area too where like messages build up, and my kids kind of showed me like, hey, you're missing out here. You need to check this. And I seen that you had sent me a message to do this podcast, and I felt terrible that I ignored you. So I'm glad we're able to connect and do the show today.
Yeah. Let's, well, I think some of the stuff, we'll probably dig into some of these tangents as far as maybe your, social media, maybe if we have little stuff like that. But I think mainly I want to dig into, obviously Steelhead and the, I guess for me, I think Laser Dub, it's just Greg Senyo Laser Dub. It seems like that's the thing that you always hear, maybe the first thing you hear about, but all that, you've got this brand going. I want to dig into that. Before we get there, just talk about how you first got into fly fishing and how you brought it to where you are.
I mean, I grew up in Girard, Pennsylvania, right on Elk Creek, which is pretty much, I would say that's the heart of that whole little region right there. Pennsylvania has a serious stocking program that stream, river, creek, whatever you want to call it, depending on where you're from. It's always full of fish and it's very user friendly. I think you'll see more license plates from around the country on that stream per year than probably any other stream in the area. But I cut my teeth there. I lived there. I could literally walk down to the creek, fish every day. So I kind of cut my teeth there. And, you know, back then we didn't really have the luxury of having all these really cool techie things to go to learn to fly fish. And we didn't really have a lot of instructors and stuff back then. So you kind of, it was by trial and error. You know, my first fly rod and reel setup was from the buyer's fair in town. It was just a little Martin rod and reel. Didn't even know I needed backing on the fly line. You know, you just kind of spooled the fly line up and put straight trilene on the end of the fly line, and you went out and you caught steelhead. You just didn't know any better back then. But as I got older, you know, there's some very good shops in the area. There's Elk Creek Sports Store, which is right, you know, toward the mouth of Elk Creek. And then you had Folly's End Fly Shop, which is about middle river. And I spent a lot of time at Folly's, and, you know, that's how I got to learn how to tie flies. I met one of the older gentlemen there. He's not with us anymore, but his name is Clyde Murray. So Clyde, for anybody that lives in the area or comes to fish in the area, everybody knew Clyde. He was the old grizzled veteran, you know, yep. Straight shooter. He was the one that points you in the right direction, didn't give you any bull crap. And he caught me as a kid stealing flies out of the bin. And instead of, you know, getting mad, telling my parents, stuff like that, he taught me how to tie flies, and that changed everything for me right there.
Wow, that's a pretty cool story. I remember when I was a kid, I had a similar thing. It was different because I was at Fred Meyer's, you know, our local store here, and I got caught up with the wrong older kid.
Right.
And we got scared shitless because, I mean, they took us in. I think they had the cops there. We were stealing, I think, like CDs. I mean, so it was a real deal. But but they took us in the back, and I mean, just scared the bejesus out of it. And I remember they, you know, I had to go home and wait for my dad to get home from work, and it was just like the worst thing ever. But I mean, for you, this is like, I mean, a similar deal, stealing flies. But you have this guy. I mean, what did that whole experience? How did that? I mean, take us there, because I don't. I'm trying to get a picture of it.
So this, you got to think real small mom and pa fly shop. I mean, it's everything that you want in that little, you know, it's like finding that really good restaurant, you know, that backwater yep. restaurant, like if you're in Louisiana or, you know what I mean? That's yep. just only locals go to, right? It kind of has that kind of feel. And it's also situated right in a campground, okay?
Oh, wow.
So it's got all kinds of dynamic going right on the river. And, you know, it's real easy to roll up there, and it's small, and, you know, and what I'd do is I'd go in, and like, they had these giant fly bins, and, you know, I mean, I never like stole, you know, like I wasn't filling my pockets kind of deal, you know? Yeah. I usually had enough money to buy like one or two flies, and, you know, I'll tell you what, anybody that fishes Elk Creek knows that shale monster that's there, you can go through flies in a hurry. Okay. You know, that whole river is just one giant piece of shale. Okay. So it eats leaders, it eats tippet, and it loves to steal your flies from you. So it wouldn't take long for me to go through a couple, you know, $5 worth of flies. Right.
Yep.
And, you know, guys still smoked inside back then, right? Or they got on the porch, right? Smoke sick. So when Clyde caught me, he didn't even like grab onto me. I was outside sitting on the porch, and he walked outside smoking a cigarette, and he's like, I still haven't figured out what I want to do with you yet. And I was like, I don't understand. And he's like, I know what you did. And he's like, I just don't know what I want to do about it yet. And he gave me like an ultimatum. He's like, I could either teach you and then you could put some flies in the shop to replace that. And he's like, then you would never have to take them again. He's like, or I can call your dad and tell them what happened, and I can go that route. And he goes, I don't think either one of us win if we go that way. So it was like literally within 10 minutes, all that happened, and he pulled out a vise and showed me how to tie what they call an egg fly and sucker spawn and stuff like that right there. And he would not let me get up off the table until I knew what the tools were. I knew how to put the thread on the hook, and that was it. I mean, I was young. I'm talking 9, 10 years old. And that's how I got started with that.
That's cool.
And we all have a hometown buddy too, right? You know, we all have that kid that we, you know, have common interests with and we love to hang out with. And I had a buddy like that in town too, and he was already versed in fly tying, okay? And I excelled after the fact off of him as well. He showed me all the little things I couldn't learn, you know, tying eggs and, you know, bully buggers and stuff like that. So
yep.
His name was Jason Gregory. I went to high school with him. You know, we used to skip school and fish all the time. And good. It's amazing how you learn in the beginning, you know. And I think everybody tries to hide the fact that they, you know, probably had a similar start. You know, they either made a mistake or they did something or they accidentally found fly fishing and, you know, it turned into something for them. Yeah. And, you know, that's my story. I can't change it. That's just the way it happened, you know.
I think it's pretty cool. And I think, you know, and I think your background, I'm not sure, you're a police officer, right? Are you still doing that?
I still am. I was up to, I was the assistant chief for a while. I'd worked, you know, for multiple agencies, and, you know, my heart was always in one small town in Ohio, Village of Wayne in Wood County. And I worked there for a long time, and I was some really good people and a really good community. Just as you move on, you know, life, everything else, it came to the point where I was the assistant chief and I step up into another role or I back off and pursue other yep. other aspirations. And I did just that. I backed off, and now I just I help with the training and I keep up on my training, and I'm there when they need me. But
that's cool.
I'm not a patrol. I'm not on patrol. I'm not really an officer by standards of what you see guys today. So
that's great. I brought that up. I've had a few police officers on. What I always think about is Dean Finnerty. He's a big guy. He was a guide, and he told this story out of nowhere about how he used to dress up in disguises. He was undercover. It was really hilarious. You know, all the backgrounds. But for this, I think of Clyde, right? I think of like this, you early on got caught stealing this really cool. Did you ever in your career think of like Clyde, that whole thing, you know, because, you know, you were kind of, as you're going through, I'm just trying to get a feel for what it's like, you know, being a police officer.
Oh, I mean, you know, it's funny is I never correlated the two. You know, I didn't, you know, early on, I had no aspirations to be a police officer. I had no aspirations to be a fishing guide. I didn't want any, I didn't grow up or think that those are things that I was going to do. They just happened that way. And this might sound weird to some of you, but, you know, you know how you realize like there's only a couple things in life that you're like really good at.
Yep.
And it's like once you find those things, you decide to do those things. Okay. That's what this all was for me. Like I couldn't play sports anymore once I was out of college, right? So like
yep.
being a police officer was like kinda you know, back then it kind of felt like I was playing a sport, you know, like there was a whole lot going on. You're interacting with people, you're constantly active. You know, if you look at the pictures online today, I mean, a lot of us look fat, but you know, guess what? I'll tell you right now, we could still run you down if we need to,
oh, yeah.
But can't outrun a radio. So, you know, it's just a product of the job. You know, it's just like fishing. It's like, there's the excitement, there's the suspense, there's the sadness. Okay. It has all of those emotions. You know, those are being a fishing guide and being a police officer, very similar. I thought it was harder to be a fishing guide than it was a police officer. At least when I was a police officer, I had a set of rules I knew I had to follow. Not only that, like the oath that we take, you know, I took it really serious. Like I was there to help people. It wasn't one of those jobs where like I was going out to try to make somebody's life miserable. Like mm-hmm. you have to be there for the person's worst time, maybe. You know, you don't need to make it any harder. And not only that, you carry it. I'm a small town cop, you know, otherwise a country cop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I put a chew in. You know, I made sure my uniform was clean. I washed my own car. Even when we were senior officers and command officers, we still worked the road. Our backup was a little further away than that of a city cop. Okay, so you became pretty self-dependent. And, you know, it was just a different atmosphere. So, you know, I think you treat things different. You know, we're city officers, those guys, I truly feel for them. Like it's nonstop. It's a ton of stress. They do have help, because there's a lot more officers, but like the amount of stuff that they have to deal with on a daily basis, I don't know if I would be built for that. You know, being honest, being truthful. I have a lot of respect for those guys because it's maybe a job today. I would not, if I had to do this job starting over today, I could not do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely changed. It's interesting. Yeah. That's though. Thanks for giving us a little perspective on that. It's always interesting to me because for the police, I grew up, my dad was, you know, a good guy and everything, but he always had this negative annotation around the police. And I think it was mainly because he always had a beer or something he was drinking in the car, you know, while he's going on a fishing trip. But, you know, as I got older, I kind of had that negative for a little bit. You know what I mean? Like I was always, but then, you know, you get to some point, you realize you're like, man, we need more police officers. Like the more police officers, you know, the better. And it's just like, so I
grew
know.
Up police, Dave.
Yeah.
Dave, when we were little kids, we feared the police, not because the police did anything. They were the police. I mean, there were these big dudes with a gun, you know, running around town. Like, you feared them because you didn't want to do anything wrong, okay? And I'll tell you right now, there's not one teenage boy in America that's not going to break the law, okay? I mean, just let's be upfront. Like, I was that kid. I think that's what made me a good police officer was, like, I was not an innocent kid, and I didn't tell myself I was. You know, I did stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
I probably made a few police officers and residents' lives miserable. Okay. those are the truth. I kind of chuckle every time I see somebody like, oh yeah, these small town local police, they're not real police. They're not, like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, you were probably that little shithead that was, feeling candy like the rest of us, you know what I mean? So, you know, don't pretend that you weren't.
No,
you know,
no. What's your what are you chewing? Are you still chewing?
Yeah, I still chew. I can't. I quit smoking a long time ago.
Yeah,
you know, when we had my first son, you know, smoking wasn't something my wife was going to allow anymore. Just being truthful, see, that's where it is, right there. My wife was like, "There will be no more smoking," and
that's awesome.
So. Man, I'll tell you what, I still crave cigarettes today, and I haven't probably had a cigarette in 15 years.
How'd you quit? What was the, take us to that point.
Just cold turkey.
You just quit one day, you're just like, I'm just done.
Well, no, it wasn't like that. And my wife told me if I catch you smoking, like there's a problem, right? Yeah. So, you know, the old saying, right? Happy wife, happy life.
I had the same ultimatum, man. Mine was actually chewing because I chewed, you know, Copenhagen for years.
That was compromise. Like, back then, you know, I was working all day at the PD, sleeping for a couple hours, driving back home and guiding. So I'd work nights, guide by day, and I did that for like 7 straight years.
Yeah.
Just a couple hours of sleep, a couple times, and like I prayed for high water and a day off.
Do you know Dean Finnerty? Have you heard of him?
I honestly, I can't say I do.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's funny because, you know, you're obviously out in the other side of the country, and he's out west, and he actually works for TU now, but he was a big guide on the North Umpqua. And he told that exact same story, just like you said. He was daytimes doing his stuff with the police, and then he would go take a nap on the river and get ready to take his clients out. And, it's probably more common than you think. I mean, as far as, doing it on your side, doing it on the side, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I will say, I think it's common amongst my generation of guides, like my time. I really don't think, like, you know, you hear it all the time, or people like, I'm hustling, or I'm busy, or I'm doing this. And it's like, I really truly don't think that a lot of guides today understand what busy means. They really don't. You know, a lot of them are just guides. Like, there's a lot of us, though, and I know we used to get that little mantra, like, oh, they're part-time guides. They're not real guides. You know, they're not in the grind every day. It's like, come on. Don't fault me for having an education, having a career, and then at the same time being able to put in a full schedule. So there are a lot of guys. I guarantee it. Your example of Dean is exactly what I'm talking about, that we went into overdrive. We put such a hustle on, and then don't forget, we were answering all our own phone calls, all our own emails, doing all of our own advertisement, still going to shows, still doing talks, doing podcasts. I mean, you name it. And that's all within a full-time job, a full-time guide job, and a full-time family. So, you know, I look at like today's generation of guides, and I'm not downplaying that they don't work hard, but I'm just saying, I think the work hard is a lot different. And you still see those guys today. There still is like a core element of guys that you'll see that are literally just hustlers. This is what they do. So, you know, so anytime somebody says to me, like, I'm too busy to do something with you or take your phone call, it's like, I hate to say it, I'm just going to say it this way. Fuck you. Don't know what fucking busy is.
I know. No, I hear you. I wondered about that too, because I've talked to now, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people just setting up this podcast and stuff. And, you know, and I've had, you know, some that haven't really given me the time of day. Not many. Sometimes you got to work a little harder on it and stuff like that. But you feel like sometimes, yeah, there's people that, you know, maybe aren't as open to the talk. I mean, what do you, you're an insider. I mean, right. You're in that space over there where, you know, I mean, do you feel like, I mean, definitely most of the people are kind of, will give you some time to talk about, give you some tips and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, Dave, if we're going to be like straightforward, I might be an insider for fly tying. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, like I've had some great opportunities, and I met some wonderful people, you know, over the years that have given me opportunities based on hard work and, you know, putting the effort in. Okay. You know, and that's what this comes down to. Like, you know, you talked about laser dub and some of those things, you know, laser dub, you know, like the idea of laser dub was, we had an older gentleman from my home area. His name was Ed Bordes. And he had a material that was called laser yarn, okay? And if you want to go through the Wayback Machine, like, we see all these new materials that come out today that just wow us, right? Like, we're like, oh, my God, check how cool this is. This is fantastic. Well, his laser yarn was that of, like, my youth, okay? And Ed died. And when Ed died, the machine died, and everything about it died with him. And I still have a crap ton of his original material. I won't even tie with it. I won't. Like, I'm afraid, like, every time I tie with it and every little piece I lose a piece of that. Well, LaserDub was creating a synthetic version and maybe a modern version to give thanks and as a tribute to Ed and to, like, all the steelhead that people caught on Ed stuff. And, you know, it kept the laser alive, okay? And, yeah, I got to it's my own synthetic blend, and it's my thought. But, like, it's the originality behind it is to pay tribute. And that's the God's honest truth with it. You know what? It became very popular. I still see it. You know, guys still tying really cool stuff with LaserDub all this time later. And that was the material that kind of gave me a catapult to, with its success, to work on other stuff. Like, you see Predator Rap, or, you know, the different chenilles, the different brush designs. You know, this is all stuff that, like, I was very lucky and appreciative to be able to work with Hairline, which would supply me with a lot of different things to be creative with. Okay. And if they didn't do that, then we might not have some of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, me sitting here and be like, yeah, I did this or I did that. Like, that's not it, Dave. It's being given the right tools and then looking at your fishery and, like, making things that complement what, not only, like, what I want to do, but, like, what works for the fishery, what will work for a species, and find and make materials that have functionality and they work, not just look pretty. They work.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to dig into that, you know, some of the tips and stuff on steelhead and in that area you're in. But just before we get there, I want to note that on the Hairline and the LaserDub, because it's interesting. I think, you know, Hairline's out in our neck of the woods, and I've talked to Marcos. I was going to have him on the show, and then I think he got really busy. So I'm still hopeful that we can hear the Hairline story. But how did that come to be? I mean, how do you connect with Hairline? You're over there
I was a contract hire for the Orvis company. And I worked closely with Sean Brillen, which at the time he was in charge of, like, the fly program and materials and stuff like that over there. And I had actually made samples of LaserDub and sent them to Sean. And Sean was like, I've got to get you guys connected. So I was introduced through Sean and the Orvis company to Hairline. And Marcos, if you ask me, there's not a man on the planet that has more material information stored in his brain than Marco. Okay. Not only that, he's got a charisma that I love about him. He's a straight shooter. He's honest. And anytime I have ideas or I need to drop something off of him, he doesn't just give you the creative thought that he has behind it, but, like, he also knows everything else, the manufacturing aspect, the distribution aspect, the whole business side of it. So he was able to, like, just enlighten me. I think that's the best way to say this. He was able to enlighten me on, like, what it really takes to design and bring out something and bring it to market, and, like, what all key elements you need to be able to do it. And it, number one, is it worth doing it? Number two, it is cool, but, like, is it just cool, or is it actually going to work? You know,
yeah.
I hope to get them on the podcast, because I think the fly tying community would benefit greatly from hearing him talk about everything.
That's cool.
Yeah, the fly tying.
That's good to hear. And I might have to hit you up. I think he's, yeah, he's definitely one of the harder guys over the, you know, over the years. So yeah, we will all work on it a little bit. But yeah, well, let's jump into it, because I think a lot of people would probably start throwing things at the you know, well, I guess there's not a screen here, but they'd be getting mad at me if we didn't jump into some steelhead fishing. So Steelhead Alley, it's a name that I think probably everybody's heard about. It sounds like this epic place. Can you describe Steelhead Alley, what it's all about, to somebody who's never been there?
Yeah, so Steelhead Alley pretty much was coined Steelhead Alley by Jerry Custich. Early 90s, he did an article in Fly Fisherman magazine, you know. And back, so think of Steelhead Alley the easiest way, like Pennsylvania. Steelhead Alley is pretty broad. I mean, it could go, depending on who you are, you know, you could say that Steelhead Alley starts in Buffalo and goes all the way to the end of Cleveland. Okay, or Vermilion River. Okay, some guys will extend that into the, you know, to Michigan, the lower part of Lake Erie. Okay, I like to just make it simple, and let's just say Ohio, or let's just say Cleveland to Buffalo. Okay,
yep.
So these are primarily spate rivers. Okay, and so spate means, you know, more or less they're water dependent. All these tributaries need some form of need some kind of water, rainfall, yeah, snow melt, to be able to, as you could tell, like my third cup of coffee, I couldn't say the word that I wanted to say.
I know, that's right. You get past that point, the coffee, I'm with you.
Oh, I love it. It's real. But, they need water and they need flow. Okay, so like most of them are shale, there's gravel, you know, everybody thinks of this as the Rust Belt over here because of all of the manufacturing from Cleveland through Erie into Buffalo, you know, back in the heyday. And the truth is that's sort of there, but these are also pretty pristine and wild looking place to go fishing. And it's not over intimidating. Like none of the rivers here are too big that you can't cross them. They are walk and wade friendly. Okay. If you're willing to go, there's plenty of places you can walk to. You know, I know that over the years there's been a lot of debate over like what's the right of ways to the rivers, what's public, what's private. You know, it's very simple. Just follow the signs. There's a ton of maps out there. Where you can go and where you can't go. I mean, there really is no more secrets here, okay? Steelhead Alley probably gets more anglers per year than I would equal it to what happens out west, you know, during the trout season, you know, when all the guys travel out there to catch trout on dry flies. It's the same thing, okay? There's really no place to hide. There's going to be a lot of people, but there's a crap ton of fish. And you know, if you're an early riser or you're a hard worker, you're gonna catch them. Okay. I always tell guys when you come to Steelhead Alley, just pack a pair of waders, dress for the weather. You could bring your trout box. You could bring a box of nymphs, molly buggers, and do just as well as you do with anything else. Okay. You don't need any special technical gear. We overcomplicate things, or let me rephrase that. We don't overcomplicate them. What we do is we choose methods that we like. Okay.
Yeah.
Why do archers shoot traditional bows still? Because they want the challenge, right? You know, there is modern equipment that they can use, but they still love that struggle, right? I think our fishing's the same way. So these waters are friendly for everything, and there's a lot of fish. So you want to strip a streamer? Come strip a streamer. If you want to swing a fly, look at the flows. If you got good flows, bring a swing rod, bring a switch rod. You can always throw an indicator every day. Okay. So it's I think that's what makes the place so busy and so popular is depending. It doesn't matter if you're like just starting out in fly fishing or if you're advanced. Everybody has an opportunity to catch a fish there. And I think that's why we've always done good as a guide service and stuff, because it's very user friendly. So like somebody that's brand new to steelhead fishing, I highly recommend they would go to Pennsylvania or Ohio to catch a steelhead, because they're actually going to catch a steelhead.
Yep. No, that's awesome. And as far as the techniques for steelhead, you mentioned a few: stripping, streamers, swinging flies, and indicators. Are there any other types of techniques, if you had to say broadly, just generally how people fish out there, that you would add to that list? Or is that pretty much it?
I mean, it is 2020. So
yeah.
I'm sure somebody's over, you know, I'm sure there's some new, I've seen everything from Tinkara to, Tinkara fishing. I'm sure some guys are Euro nymphing. Guys are fishing beads. I think it's to each his own. Yeah. Okay. You know, like there's a core group of people for pretty much any kind of tactic you want to use at them. What I mean?
That's right.
Like I said, you know, we're looking at a small streams with numbers of fish. Okay. So if you're an early riser, you can get out there and get a couple of spots that you want. You're going to do well. You're going to have a shot. You're going to catch fish.
Well, let's take it to, I don't know if we want to talk about Elk Creek or maybe a stream, you know, in Ohio or something to focus on. But if you were going to go there, you know, for steelhead fishing, like today or whenever the hot spot is, you know, what technique would you catch the fish there? Break that down a little bit.
So you're saying like if I was just going to go personal fishing today?
Well, maybe talk about, is there a big difference between that versus what you'd be doing guiding?
Yeah, I mean, when you're guiding, I mean, your emphasis is more or less to, like, you know, you have a customer that's paying you for your expertise. You know, you should be focused on whatever the easiest tactic is to make them successful. And, you know, once they have a little bit of success, then you can change it into whatever you need it to do, unless they specify otherwise. You know, and if they specify they want to go swing for a steelhead, then, you know, obviously you're going to go to a different section of a river than you would maybe gator fishing, or, you know what I mean? So, I mean, those kind of things change how you approach it. If I was personal fishing, I would be probably just wanting to swing a fly. And the reason is it's mellow. Like, I'm there to chill out. I mean, I've been steelhead fishing since I was a kid. I've probably caught how many thousands of these things, okay? I don't really need to catch 10,000 more to be happy. I just need to enjoy the river, catch a couple of fish if I can, and enjoy my day. Like, there's no – it's not a Super Bowl anymore, okay? I'm not out there to win a prize. I'm not taking 40 pictures for the gram, okay? You know, I want to catch a nice fish. You know, but do I want to get a nice picture or something? Sure. But that's it. I want to simplify it. I want to get back to enjoying it. You know what I mean? And that's the thing. That's why I don't guide anymore. You know, it's guiding, you've got an objective, and, you know, and I miss the people. I do miss a lot of the people I fished with, okay? But it is still, there's that stressor in fishing to be successful, right? So when I go personal fishing, I don't have any illusion of being successful. I just want to go and go fishing. And I still catch fish. I still use the right tactics. I still go out and have a good time. You know, like I said, it's just, I'm not doing it for, I'm not doing an interview afterward. You know what I mean?
No.
Like, I was on the river today and I caught six fish, and look at me. Like, I could give two shits now. Like, you got to think about this a little bit too, Dave. Like, how many times do you go fishing this year?
Like total?
Yeah. Like, I mean, you don't have to give me an exact answer, but, like, you know, if you went fishing a couple dozen times this year, Dave, like, could you imagine, like, what would it be like if we had to stop and take pictures the whole time?
Oh, yeah.
Or you had to do this, or you had to. Yeah. You know, like, think about it. I mean, you're running a podcast too. Like, you know, it gets to a point where it's like, yeah, I got to have material, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, for me, fishing, it became all that. And it became less about just, join the river. You know, what's funny is like the whole world thinks like, oh, you know, he must not catch fish anymore. Like, that's not the case. I just don't really, you know, do I really need to tell you or show you, you know, is that what success is driven off of? Personal success is driven off of what other people think, you know, and that really bugs me. I think that's where we are today.
The social media stuff, right? That's a big push on it.
And listen, I am pro social media. I 100% think we need strong social media for business, strong social media for, you know, if you're running a company and stuff like that. Okay. If you do work in the fishing industry, it is smart to have strong social media. Okay. You could still have strong social media though, and still go fishing a day and not tell anybody, and the world's not going to end.
Yep.
You know, and that's, you know, like kind of the approach that I take. And I'll be honest with you, I have a whole lot less stress worrying about it. A whole lot less stress.
Yeah.
Think about it. Back when I started fishing, we didn't have iPhones. Facebook wasn't even a wet dream yet. Okay. And the only ones that knew you caught anything were what? Maybe your dad and maybe a couple of buddies, right?
Yep.
Didn't change the experience, did it?
Nope.
Yeah, that's, you know, I'm starting to realize that stuff now, you know, now that I have two kids of my own. Add COVID and all the other stuff. Now these kids are trapped at home, stuck in front of devices, and, you know, my kids are going to have the technical skills moving forward, but they're not going to have any personal skills, and that really bugs me. Okay, so.
Yep.
How do you set a better example? And that's where I am with this, Dave.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I think, you know, you mentioned there, just at the start, the tactics and things like that, as far as fishing, it's interesting because obviously, you know, we've talked a lot about swinging flies. I've had a bunch of guests, but I think it might be interesting just to hear if you'd be willing, even though maybe you're not guiding now, but just talking about the, I don't know if it's the indicator thing or the nymphing thing. I mean, what was your thing when you were guiding? Can you break down just quickly what that looked like?
Sure.
What the guys were doing?
So, I mean, early on, I mean, and it really depends. So I'll just say it this way. So that way, anybody listening will understand. So like if you came on a guide trip with me, usually one of my first questions are like, what do you expect in your day? What do you want to do? Okay. And I give them their options. Like, you know, I'll tell them like, you know, we can go indicator fishing, which is all I'm going to do is like our rivers are shallow enough. I can buy a standard 9-foot 3X, 2X leader. Okay. Run a 2-egg fly or, you know, small streamer, woolly bugger, nymph, egg combination and have an indicator set up that I can slide it for the depth of the river, okay? Which there's plenty of options for. You can run them inline. You can run yarn. I just ran a big cork or, you know, foam indicator, preferably all white. And all white for the reason is all the bubble lines, all the bubbles are white, okay? And it's easy to see if you get low clear water, that big orange indicator isn't spooking things. So, you know, it was a very basic and rudimentary system, but it was effective. I think guys would screw up more on how thick their tippet was versus how long their leader was. And, you know, fly design, you know, like, got to know when to get flashy and when to not be flashy, right? And I think that all comes from how much time you spend on the river, how much you do it, right? There's a reason why the Prince Nymph has caught so many fish around the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, those are things as a guide or a fly tire, those are things I take note of. Okay, like wow, you know, if that works that way, how do I incorporate that into what I like to do, right?
Yep.
So indicator rigs are very, very, like I said, it's basic. Anybody can go throw a couple, you know, split shot, obviously, to how deep the water is. Okay. And I used Blackbird, which is like a center pinner, you know, shot because it's dark and it's round, you know, kind of matched in with the scenery instead of that bright tin colored water ground and stuff. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I just tried to dull it down as much as possible. So, like I said, just a standard 9-foot leader, two flies, tippet, a white indicator, preferably foam or cork, and some split shot. And you're in the game. And like I said, you could bring your trout box at that point. You know, simple woolly buggers, San Juan worms, egg flies, prince nymphs, pheasant tails, hare's ears, all successful fly patterns. Day one. Okay. If I got a guy that wants to strip streamers. Okay. So, I mean, let's face it. You've seen what's going on in the world. Like the streamer game is pretty impressive right now.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
There's some amazing streamers today. I mean, some people that I take note of and I like to fish their patterns is like Blaine Chocolate's Game Changers. Okay. Kelly Gallup, big fan of Kelly Gallup stuff. All that stuff is crossover. Like you can fish all that stuff for steelhead. Okay. Our steelhead are pretty ravenous, you know, and not only that, they school up and they're on these drop offs. There's a lot of wood and debris in certain sections of the river. You just got to learn what size and what kind of material combinations. Like sometimes you want to run a fly that's got materials that will sink or some weight in the fly. So that way you can still use a floating line and a shorter leader because the water's shallow. You don't want to hook the shale, but you want some depth, right? But then you have some bigger holes and more CFS with feet per second, you know, flow of the river. Where you need to use an intermediate or sinking line, and then you can use said fly pattern there as well. Hmm. Okay. So it just really depends on, I mean, this is what you hire a guide for, right? So that he understands the different structure and scenarios you're going to face on a river. Most clients that I ever fished with, like they hired me to learn first and foremost. You know, they're not going to hire – there are guys that hire guides every year. I know. I had a lot of them. But I also had guys that the only reason they hire guys to go have that bonus crazy good day, and then they go fish 2-3 days on their own, and they want to have some intel to be able to do that.
Exactly.
Like what flies are working? How should I be rigging for this, right?
Yep. Yep.
So, and I think that's what makes like guides valuable is they're instructors, you know, could you imagine, you know, I hear it all the time. So guys will talk about, oh, they hate fishing guides, right? Like good anglers. Let's talk about guys that are out fishing, good anglers. Well, like if you take an area like Steelhead Alley, that's got 25 states represented with people that have never been there before and they all hit the river. I mean, guides have actually done a great job of educating, showing the etiquette and the tactics and things that are needed that all these people can fish together. You know, exactly. if they didn't know, they'd be standing on top of each other, you know, probably see a whole lot more punches on the river.
Exactly. I was just going to say, it's kind of like you said before, it's like the police officer and the guide. There's a lot of similarities there.
Yes, it's a ton. You know, I mean, it's, you know, like, I don't think, and I mean, I'm guilty of this too. I never looked at the forward consequences for some things. You know, I just, you know, I got irritated that, you know, this guy beat me to the river or this guy's doing that, which it's like, it doesn't matter. Like everybody plays a role. And like, you have to be smart enough to see it. And I don't think a lot of times people don't care. I mean, I think we're at that stage, especially now. I mean, look what's going on in the world. Like people are pretty selfish. It's dog eat dog. Like they don't care. Like I'm fishing that hole and I drove 3.5 hours to get here. I'm fishing it no matter what. And it's like, dude, just sit on the bank, chill out for 10 minutes, you know?
Yeah. How has that been when you think of it? Because, you know, there's plenty of places where you think, you know, combat fishing around the country. I mean, if you look back in the day when you first got started versus today, is there a lot of differences there as far as, I mean, is it still, or was it combat then and is it still combat now?
I think every day on Steelhead Alley has a little bit of combat in it. Okay. But I also think like if you just stay on the move and you stay focused, you're going to find what you want. I just, there is enough people fishing and there's enough places to go that you're always going to run into someone. But at the same token, you're still going to find some solitude during that day too. So I think you have a little bit of everything rolled up into your day. Okay. And I do think people are a lot better, you know, about how they treat each day. You know, the ones that are, they're go-getters, they're anglers, they do fine. You're never going to see them struggle.
Yeah.
They're going to work through and they're going to catch well. It's lazy that's not going to do well. Okay? That's going to get confrontational or entitled. Like I'm entitled to this, you know.
Right.
You know, I know I was that guy. I'm not going to sit there. I was young. I was like, I'm entitled to this. This is what you have to come back to the realization that, you know, none of us have a right to go fishing. Like, it's actually a privilege that we're allowed to do it. We have to buy a license to do it. It's a privilege.
Right.
It's just like a driver's license. We don't have the right to drive. We've been granted the privilege of driving, which I know that sounds crazy, right? It does. It's America, right? It's the United States of America. But think about it. Can your license be taken away from you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a privilege.
Yeah.
So every day – now, anything I do in the outdoors, I treat it as a privilege. I go out and I do my thing. And if it's crowded and I don't like it or I have an issue, I move on.
Yeah.
I'm the next thing. And that's any fishing now. You know, I don't think steelhead's popular. You know, Great Lakes steelheading is
it the most popular thing out there?
I mean, if you look at our side of the world, I mean, think about where we are, okay? So look at the Great Lakes. We are a metropolitan. Like, how many major cities are located within the Great Lakes within driving distance of the Great Lakes? Okay. So you can't sit here and tell me that we don't see, we see probably as great a pressure as the West gets for 3 months a year, right?
Yep.
We get it for, 6 months a year.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, for me, like, if you want to, you know, if you're a hardcore angler and you want to fish, like, the time to fish our water now, and if you want to have it to yourself, is you want to go and nobody else wants to go. You got to go when the water's a little higher, a little muddier, a little dirtier. You got to go when it's a lot colder. And, you know, like, that's me. I don't even waste my time in this early season in the fall anymore. I'm not fishing for steelhead in September, October, or November anymore. Period. Not only that, you know, I become a solitary creature. I'd rather sit in a tree stand and fight with myself than fight with somebody else. Okay. Get my own peace of mind. But come December, January, February, it's cold. I mean, I hear guys talk about winter steelheading on the West Coast. I went there. It rains. It's 55 degrees. It's
yeah. What's a nasty day there on your home river? What's the nastiest?
It could be 20 degrees. Like, you pounding ice off the river just to fish a run. Your gear freezing. You know, your fly frozen on the way to the next hole. Got to put it back in the water just to unfreeze it. And I'm talking about walking, you know, half a mile through the woods and 2 to 3 feet of snow just to get there. Okay? I mean, when I think of winter steelheading, I look at Michigan Great Lakes anglers. I look at Ohio Great Lakes anglers. I look at Pennsylvania Great Lakes anglers. Those got New York. We're in the snow belt. We're in some crazy cold temperatures, and these guys are out there in waders standing in water. That is Now I will say, you guys on the West Coast, like, I went and spent some time on the Olympic Peninsula and about lost my mind with the amount of rain. I literally learned that no raincoat is impervious to the Olympic Peninsula's rain. I got rained on so hard. It blew my mind. Mentally challenging in its own right.
You need pretty much rubber when you get out to the... Yeah,
but I wasn't frozen. That's what I'm saying, Dave. I wasn't frozen to my core, questioning what the hell I'm doing for a steelhead. You know, and people used to say, oh, these steelhead won't eat when it gets to this. They won't chase a swung fly when the water is so cold. Horse shit. You just got to slow down, slow your presentation down.
Yeah.
They want to eat just like anything else. Okay. I think everything acclimates after time. you know? So that's when I like to go, Dave. That's time when,
that's perfect.
And if I see two other guys on the river, it's usually the most excellent conversation you're ever going to have, because you're both numb and you're both looking at each other like you're crazy sons of bitches for being out
there. Exactly. You're a crazy steelhead fisher. I love that you said the OP, because Trevor Kovich was on and he actually broke down. He talked about the fact that the same thing. The OP is getting pretty busy too, so he fishes when it's higher water. He likes to go those times when it's a little bit higher, a little bit off color.
That's one of the gentlemen I fished with when I was out there.
Oh,
Trevor
cool.
He's probably in my mind like one of the best swung fly guides in the country.
That's awesome.
That dude is rock solid. So, but yeah, I'm just saying though, you know, that rain out there, the stuff that they have to deal with, I understand the blowouts and the cancellations and the craziness. Like, I'm not downplaying that they don't have bad weather and harsh conditions. I'm just saying the what I picture as winter steelhead is rain your way, okay? And like my way is like your waders could stand up on their own. It's so cold when you're done. So it's just a different perspective. Different fisheries that they, but I think everybody has the same goal, and that's to hold the brightest steelhead they can at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. Just to get a chance at a fish is the goal. And we talked, you know, a little bit about, you mentioned streamers. Do you have, I'm not sure on your fly patterns, do you have some fly patterns that you're, you, I don't know if you have anything for streamers or that you're tying, or is it mainly you focus on the material side?
I mean, I've designed enough flies over the course of, you know, I guess, guiding and fishing. But a lot of them are, you know, you take the bits and pieces of what's out there. And I think, you know, this has always been a tough question for me, Dave, is, you know, guys will talk about developing flies, right? Developing flies. And then, like, every year I find a new book, you know, or some way back machine that's like, holy shit, like there are people in the 50s that had this idea.
Yeah.
I think we take the best bits and pieces from all of our favorite fly tires and people over history, and we create things in our image. Is that fair? And I'm not taking anything away from like what people are tying, but yeah, there's a few patterns that like, I think they speak to me and my personality, the artificial intelligence. Okay. Which, you know, incorporates, I watched Kevin Feenstra. He ties probably with more flash than any person I've ever met. And he's probably one of the more effective match the hatch bait fish expert steelheaders out there. Okay. I've incorporated stuff just watching him. Maybe I'm just saying I have a hard time taking credit for fly pattern development. Okay. I have some flies that have my name, the AI, the artificial intelligence, egg raider. I have some things that are specific to my personality. But the materials that I do to put in them, you know, those are my thoughts and collaborations with Hairline.
Yeah.
And I get more pleasure out of seeing people tie with the materials and finding new concepts and ideas than I do worrying about putting a name on a fly.
Yep. No, it's great. I love that. And on the streamer stuff, so, you know, stripping streamers, do you do a little bit of that? Can you speak to the, you know, what that's all about? Are guys doing, is there more, I know there's more and more swing guys swinging, but is there more guys stripping flies as well?
Well, I mean, swinging, especially in my area, you know, that picked up strong probably 15 years ago. I mean, like, we all had the West Coast bug. We all wanted to swing big, gaudy, flashy, fun streamers and spay flies. I mean, let's face it. You know, when Ed Ward and Jerry French did the Intruder, it totally changed Great Lakes fishing. Like, we all wanted to fish Intruders, every one of us. Okay, so, but now, like, you know, like, streamers are hot. I mean, and you've got some really good ones like paving the way. You've got Russ Madden doing the chromatic nuts and the flash monkeys and like stuff that is created to catch steelhead, you know, salmon, trout on a stripped fly. Okay. You've got the Game Changer platform with Blaine. There are guys out there. It is an exciting thing to do to go out there to a small stream and strip a streamer and have a steelhead eat. So yes, our guys doing it. Yeah. The smart ones are going out there and they're figuring it out and they're getting it done.
Yeah.
And they're finding out that it's just, they can have just as successful of a day doing that as swinging a fly or running an indicator. I think that's an important part about this, the whole thing is go out and do what makes you happy. So yeah. And it's easy. I mean, just depending on where you're at. I mean, I think water depth and speed has a lot to do with what type of line and setup that you're going to use for something like this. But everything from a floater to an intermediate to a full sink with, you know, short fluorocarbon leaders, I think you just got to go out and do it. Swim flies have shown themselves to be successful. And if you check out, I mean, there's quite a bit of media out there with, I noticed my old company, Steelhead Alley Outfitters, their guides have been putting videos up of steelhead eating, you know, game changers, and you get to watch the whole visual take. That's right
cool.
On video.
That's cool. So, how is the streamer stripping different than just, you know, like just swinging flies? Can you talk a little bit about that? How, for somebody who's never stripped streamers before, what that looks like?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a more active way to fish is the best way to put it. You're constantly moving, right? So when you swing a fly, you're making a cast, you're, you know, swinging across the river, you're stripping in line at the end of your cast or the end of your drift. And then you're, you know, taking a couple steps down river or you're staying where you're at and you're casting again. Okay. You're looking for a fish to be active to chase the fly or swim behind the fly and eat it and come tight, and that's eating on the swing, right?
Yep.
It flies, you're using the river current as tension to swim the fly across the river. Or when you're stripping a streamer, you're fishing like all water types. And what you're doing is you're casting and you're stripping in line in different erratic movements, you know, constantly the whole drift, the whole cast, everything is movement. So you're completely active in that process the entire time. And I think that's what's appealing is it's not like swinging a fly where it's a cast and a weight. Just like the indicator fishing, you're casting, you're putting it in the food lie and you're waiting for the indicator to go underwater, right? So when you're fishing streamers, you're casting, you're stripping, you're recasting. You're visually watching your fly swim, okay? Because a lot of guys will use bright or white flies so that even a couple of feet deep underwater, you can still see the fly, okay? So it's just visually and physically, you're constantly moving with that. And I think that's very appealing to people.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. No, it's awesome. I love I think that's probably somebody wanted to dig more into that. They could probably go, you know, I've had Kelly Gallup on. We could probably just go, and you mentioned Blaine. They could probably just look at those guys and see what they're doing for, like, brown trout, right, and kind of move it over with different flies for steelhead. Would it be a similar deal, do you think?
Yeah. I mean, all those guys are extremely well-versed. I mean, Kelly Gallup was a Michigan guy.
That's right.
Gallup's caught steelhead. Blaine's caught steelhead, okay? Like these guys have specialties and they're known for certain things, but their experience level far exceeds what their specialties are. Okay. That's the great thing about having some of these guys around. Okay. They have a lot to offer. You have a lot to learn from them. You know, you just got to pay attention and see what they're doing. They're not one dimensional. Okay. And I hear it all the time, you know, and I used to be on this, you know, let's take Blaine's Game Changer, for example. Like there are guys out there that literally won't tie the fly. They're like, why would I put that much time and effort and those components and that spend that kind of money to create this kind of, well, you know what, if you're thinking like that, like, then don't do it. I don't care. I don't want to hear you gripe. like, go do your own thing, right?
Yep.
You know, there, but there comes a time when there's a certain person that's like, you know, I need to try these things. You know, think about, go back to your, I mean, when we were all young, we all fished spin gear, I would assume, right? I mean, I didn't grow up with a fly rod, okay? I didn't go to the store and not buy a Rapala, right? You know, I fished spinner baits when I was, you know what I mean? I did all these things. We've gotten to the point where we look at things like, well, that's not fly fishing. Well, I'm so tired of hearing that. I really think people need to get back to being anglers.
Yeah.
100%. Get back to being anglers. Like, you could shove your bullshit up your ass, go fucking whine to somebody else. I don't give a shit. I really think that social media has given us a, you know, where like our opinion actually matters, right?
Yeah.
It don't.
You know what I think it is? I think what it is, and I've heard, I totally agree, because Kelly Gallup has said it before himself. A lot of people have. And I think those are the people I'm realizing are almost maybe the most knowledgeable people, are the ones that actually do both ways. You know, Kelly talks about how his stuff came from bass fishing and he loves, you know, and I've heard that a number of times. And it seems like, but I think what it comes down to is that, again, social media, like building, growing something, that ultra niche stuff sells. You know, if you're the ultra niched, this, you know, whatever topic it is, that sells better than if you're just the general, I'm just an angler. You know what I mean? I think that's part of it. So it's almost, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's probably some of that, but you mentioned a couple resources. Russ Madden, I've heard his name come up a number of times. So again, let's just bring it back to streamers. Who, if we're talking streamers for Steelhead, is Russ, or are there other people who would be good resources if they want to dig in more on this?
I mean, there are some core streamer guys that I think everybody should pay attention to. You know, just because they put a label on it says brown trout, okay? I think if you're a fly tire, a legit fly tire, okay, and I think that you're a legit angler, and I don't mean that you're like pro. I'm just saying like you love this, okay? There are some guys you need to pay attention to. You've got obviously Kelly Gallup, okay? You've got Russ Madden. You've got Blaine Chocolate. You've got Rich Strollis. You've got Mike Schmidt. And that's just guys I'm thinking about for trout and steelhead. Yeah. You got Matt Gradzewski. Okay. I mean, there are a lot of the names that I'm mentioning to you are Great Lakes guys or have Great Lakes backgrounds. Okay. We have a lot of bait fish here. We have we have everything here. We have trout here. We have steelhead here. We have salmon here. We have muskie here. We have pike here. We have bass here. We have everything here. Okay. So, you know, I put a lot of stock into the guys that fish the Great Lakes or, you know, around the East that do a lot of this, cause they're in it. This is their specialty. This is what they're good at. But I think all this stuff is crossover stuff too. I think you can take, you know, what's the easiest way to say it. There's influence from all parts of the country, like saltwater fishing. A lot of the streamer patterns that we see for trout have saltwater influence. Tommy Lynch is an exceptional type. Look at his drunken disorderly that he uses to catch brown trout. Now he's catching steelhead with it, right? Just shows you the adaptability. I've caught everything on that thing, you know, from smallmouth to steelhead on that fly. But they all have influence from some of the older guys, you know, the Mark Sedatis, okay? Bob Popovich, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, that hollow, big fly, original, you know, think about it. These are guys that had to cast giant flies for fish before we had the material base that you could build really cool giant flies, right?
That's right.
They were doing it on subpar equipment compared to what we have today, okay? And I'm with you when you said that, like, the niche, right? The niche stuff does really well. And I mean, like, you take great guides out there that have niche patterns. You know, Cali's got niche patterns that I guarantee were originally guide patterns for him. Mike Schultz with the Swing and D series. That's a niche pattern that he's adopted like from multiple tires, from Sadati, from Blaine, you know, to create his own swim fly for smallmouth bass. Blaine with the Game Changer. I mean, all these guys have created things to fit their niches, but they are also like, it's not just limited to that. It can be used for everything they want to do. Yep. So I think, like I said, I think we all steal something from each other. Okay. I think we learn from the guys in the South. We learn from the guys in the West. We learn from the guys in the North, you know, and then they learn from the guys in the East as well. And, that's the one thing with social media that I will say is an incredible benefit to everybody out there that wants to be, or that wants to tie their own flies. Is back when I was doing this, you created flies that maybe nobody's seen unless they went into a magazine publication or something for years. Okay. Where today I could tie it, I could put it online and 2,000 people, 4,000 people are going to see it and be tying it by tomorrow.
Yeah, that's cool.
Oh, it's like our information sharing today is light worlds ahead of where it was even 15 years ago. Yeah. So that's the benefit. That's the benefit of this whole media platform is information.
Totally. Yeah, no, I agree. That is the good thing. Seeing a new, a bright fish or just a fish or a new pattern is cool. What about, as far as, you mentioned the materials again. I mean, I think the laser dub, can you talk just briefly about some of the materials that you've worked with? Maybe talk about the process. Laser dub maybe is the first one. I'm not sure if that was the first one you got going, but talk about another material that you've created and what that process was like. Is it just kind of a conversation between you and Marcos back and forth, or how does that come to be?
I mean, you know, I would think like Hairline's the manufacturer. So, you know, yeah. Is some of that stuff personal? Absolutely.
So they're actually they're making this thing.
They're either making it or sending it to be sourced or, you know, to be created a certain way, you know. And I feel like, do I have enough education on the background to say something and feel like I'm giving you accurate information? Yes. But at the same token, no, because I feel like, you know, it's part of this process that I was telling you, like we can all create something, you know.
Yeah.
Every fly tire I know has been to Joann Fabrics and found something that they like, myself included. Okay. But I'm just saying, like, when it comes to, I mean, there's certain things that you need to do. Like, I'll put it to you this way. Some things get cut, some things get torn, some things get stretched. You know, like you learn from trial and error. It's just like colors. Like, could you imagine, trying to appease everybody with every color that you could possibly get. It's just impossible. So the big deal is, as I look at it, is I've always tried to find materials that solve the problem, that were easy to incorporate in my fly tying. So if you want some bulk without the weight, then there's your laser dub. If you want, some flash and some filler, that's where, you know, some of the fusion fibers and the hairs come from. Okay. I always had a problem with brushes. When I bought brushes, I was making my own forever, but anybody that makes brushes knows, like, you know, it's just quite the process. Right. So I did brushes with, Enrico Puglisi, you know, the Chromatic series, which these are very fine, sparse brush. They're made so that you can wrap them in underbodies and stuff in spay flies, or use them as sparse heads on streamers. Okay. It's the biggest rule in fly tying. I tell every new student or anything I have that comes through this is, like, once you learn material control and portion, like, when I first started tying, I put too much material on the hook. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at pictures on my Instagram and stuff, guys go, oh, there's just a whole lot going on in there. No, there's really not. It just looks that way, you know, but all the functionality is right. You get it all the time, you know, like, oh, he's got 15 things in this recipe. Well, it's little bits of this and little bits of that. I mean, that's the whole point of having materials, right? You know, if you're getting into fly fishing to save money, like, come on. Like, yeah. You know, it's the oldest joke in the world. It's just like golf. You ain't saving money playing golf.
No.
Okay? No. Like, get over it. Like,
yeah.
You either want it or you don't. The we don't need to fly fish. Okay. Fly fishing isn't going to save the world. Okay. This is a hobby. This is a sport. This is something that you want to do or you don't. Okay. So, you know, I treat it exactly like that. You know, I think that's I wish the automakers, you know, like when I went and bought a car, they'd be as direct as that. Cause that's exactly what you either want this car or you don't, you know? So that's, you know, that's the material. And that's the thing is, like, think about how much material is out there. I mean, Hairline's one company, right? But just think of how thick these catalogs are. Think about how many new things are coming all the time.
Yep.
You know, I mean, we're making stuff out of suede, where people are making stuff out of tablecloths. Okay. You know, I'm real big on synthetics. Okay. And the reason for that is, like, is it the best for the environment? I'm not saying that it is. I guess it's like the lesser evil in small amounts is the way I look at it. Okay.
What would you use other than, so for your stuff, if you take the, let's just take the laser dub, for example. I mean, instead of the laser dub, what would be a non-synthetic that you could use?
A wool?
Just wool, a wool.
Like, yeah, like natural wool or fur, you know, and that's the way I look at this is, like, you know, like, yes, it is synthetic. But, like, they only make so many chickens. There's only going to be so many furs. Okay. I try to make materials that I have something to create a fly or a lure or something fishable, like, after I can't get those things. Okay.
Exactly.
That's the way I've always tried to treat this is, like, I'll always have a way to stay connected to, you know, one of the things I like to do, and that's catch steelhead.
That's cool. Do you know what, I'm just curious, I'm not sure if you even know it, but, like, the laser dub or the other stuff, I mean, what the actual material is? Is it like a polypropylene or something? Or what is that stuff?
It's like an acrylic fiber.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just,
you know, and there's, don't forget there's multiple elements to it.
Exactly.
So it's RNA too. You know what I mean? So, I think they're all different. Like,
yeah.
Some things are trilobal, some things are antron.
There's a bunch of differences. Yeah, I always kind of look at the, you know, I don't always, but just like the clothing, like what I'm wearing right now, I think about all of the stuff that's not natural. But I will say the stuff that's natural, the wool, the down and stuff is kind of my favorite stuff. It's funny, but there's tons of synthetic materials that are out there in clothing that works really great, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great example. I mean, like, think about this. Not very many of us are wearing cotton anymore to go hunting or fishing, are we?
No.
You know, we've learned once you sweat or get wet in cotton, you're toast.
Yep.
Right?
It's all
synthetic. You know, so all these synthetic materials that wick away moisture or give you a barrier, I mean, with the exception of wool, which you can still get wet and be warm, you know what I mean? Synthetics have kind of made us last longer in the outdoors.
Yep.
And I don't think it gets the credit it deserves to do that. And I mean, that's a great analogy to use with the way I approach doing materials. Just wanted to give you something that was going to last longer or we are going to have available longer. Okay. And, you know, did I get some pushback? Like, oh, you're doing all this oil based and there's always going to be that environmental nut job that literally is going to, you know, like, point the finger, but then you look at him and he's, He's using lead split shot.
He's got a cell phone in his pocket.
He's still fishing a hook, and you know, the rabbit that he's using's died, and you know what I mean, like, it's like, listen, all these things, we're all guilty, you know. Can we do a little better? Yes. You know, I try to make a point to not lose flies or to retrieve them.
This is really a one I think hits home on that, you know, on the copper mines, which is a big thing, you know, that's up in Alaska. And I think there's some that, up in your right, the boundary waters, which I haven't dug into, but there's some mines up there. But the ironic thing is that all of that stuff, that copper, is going into cell phones.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's where it's going. Like, if we didn't have cell phones, you know, I don't know, maybe we wouldn't need those mines, but everybody loves their cell phone. And I don't think anybody's willing to, you know, just throw it away right now. Right.
Yeah. I mean, just think about that. We all carry around a device that controls our lives.
Gosh, that's a rough feeling.
I make fun of my dad. Okay. I make fun of my dad for years because, like, I feel like he's always missing out. Okay. He carries a flip phone still.
Nice.
And, it takes him like 14 minutes to say hi in a text message. I remember the Nokia, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, dude, you should just get a phone. Like, so, you know, so you can stay connected. And he's like, if it's important enough, you know, somebody will, you'll call me.
Exactly.
Or you'll find me. And there's some truth to that. Like, that holding on, you know, I kind of envy that now, you know, that I'm connected. And if it wasn't for having to work, okay, like, I don't know if I would still have one. I think when the day comes that I don't need to work, you know, it won't be at work and I don't need it for work, that I won't have it at all. I will go back to a flip phone. Maybe by then I'll probably have a Cricket. I'll need something with like bigger numbers on it.
Oh yeah, you do. That's so, right. Now, how old are you now? It sounds like you're about similar age as me.
43.
Yeah. So that's it. We're in the same age. So I'm a little older. I got you by a year or so. But yeah, man, that's it. It's you know, glasses, and you're in that transitional zone where things are not too far off to be. I mean, and your dad is he in his 80s?
No, my dad actually had me when he was young. He had me when he was 18. So, you know, my dad's cool. So
young buck.
Yeah. You know, that hippies in the 70s, they didn't follow the rules either. So
that's right. Was your dad, your dad's more like low 70s then?
Upper 60s.
Upper 60s. That's cool, man. That's really cool. Yeah. So, and did your dad, was he, in fly fishing, any of that stuff?
Negative.
No.
So my dad would take us fishing because we loved fishing, you know, like in Pennsylvania, like the opening day of trout season, the stocking of trout was like a party. It's like the opening day of deer season. It's like a tradition, you know what I mean? And, you know, he'd take me and my brother, you know, with our ultralight spinning gear and night crawlers or maggots. And, you know, we'd go catch brown trout. That was the extent of his fishing. My dad's a hunter, a big hunter. And, you know, he travels, he bear hunts, you know, whitetail. He's like me. Whitetail's very a big deal for our family, and loves to hunt wild turkey. So it's he puts all that effort into being in the woods.
That's cool. And that's part of it. Sounds like we're not going to have time today to dig into your hunting. It sounds like you're into archery, but is that kind of comes from him?
Yeah, that stuff's just for me anyways. So it works that way.
That's it. Archery is your profession is your the fishing, but archery, is that kind of your passion, more your passion now?
No, that's not fair. So, I mean, I look at it like, and I hope people out there listening really listen to this part. So to be, you know, to be known, to be a good guide, to be good in that business, you know, to put yourself on sort of like a pedestal, like you want to be the best I want to be the best steelheader I could be. So that way people wanted to fish with you. That's part of the deal. Right. But what you have to do to get to there is you have to give up everything else that you love. So I gave up archery hunting for 20 plus years. to be a steelhead guide, because archery season, steelhead season in the fall are the same time. Okay. So for all those years, I spent time on the river with strangers. And I'm not saying those strangers didn't turn into friends. I'm not saying that I did not enjoy those things, but it finally got to the point where I had to stop and think about it. Like, I'm giving up all this time on at my hunting camp with my dad, my grandfather, my family, to do this, to be the man, or, you know, and I'm saying that lightly, okay? I'm just saying to be super focused on being the best steelhead guide I could be. And that was a mistake. That was a huge mistake to give up all that. I can't get that time back. My grandfather died. You know, I missed time. Like, you know, my dad said to bed, once enough. My dad said it best. Once enough, enough.
Yeah.
I'm really proud of what you've done. But when's enough enough? Like, when are you going to do the things that you used to do? Okay. So, and he was right. Okay. He was right. And now, you know, I do these things because they're part of me. This is what I do. I don't care. I even had somebody send me an email. It's like, you know, if you keep hunting and you don't stay active in your fishing, you're not going to be known anymore. I'm like, go fuck yourself. I mean it. Just like that. Fuck yourself. I didn't do this to be known. Like, I did this to try to be the best I could be at this. You know, that stuff comes with it. Like, in the fact that somebody would feel like they're entitled to me being part of their satisfaction really, really pisses me off. Okay. That you had enough balls to email me and tell me that you're basically saying that everything I worked for, I'm going to be a failure because I decided to do something I have a passion for. Come on.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Like, what kind of fucking people have we become when you feel like smart enough, you know, brave enough to send somebody an email like that?
Yeah. Yeah, that is, that's,
you know, so I mean, those were the changing days for me, you know, when I started feeling like that's all I was like a resource for everybody else, then I was done. And now, and then I'm going to be upfront. I'm here. I'm still working in the fishing industry. I'm really passionate about working with the guys at Schultz Outfitters. I help, as an operational manager there.
Yeah.
I'm there 4 to 5 days a week. I'm kind of behind the scenes. I'm putting the time in. I work with some of the best people I know. Okay. And if you need me, I'm easy to find. I will answer any question. I will spend any amount of time helping somebody out. That's not what I'm trying to say when I say I'm angry or dysfunction, you know, about how I was treated with that situation or why I've chose to go a different path, right? I'm still available. I still help people every day. I'm still active. I still do fly tying. I do all that. I just don't show it now. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to see 15 fly photos a week on Instagram. You're not going to see me post on Facebook anymore. But if you need me, you can pick up a phone and I'd love to talk to you. You know what I mean? I want things to be more personal and real, and not what you see on YouTube. You know, I'm not going to be that guy ever again. Yep. So, you know, and it's become more rewarding. I've been over at the shop now for the last, you know, 3-4 years in that capacity. And, most people don't even know it. Now you do.
Yeah. And is that Mike Schultz? Is that the Schultz Outfitters?
Yeah, Mike Schultz. Schultz Outfitters in Ypsilanti, Michigan. Probably one of the most well-rounded shops in the region. We don't have an online store. We have a very strong social media presence, and we have a very, very strong belief that the only way to give you the best customer service is to talk to a person that actually fishes. Yep. So you should call. You should talk to us. Our reviews and the stuff that's said about us out there, you know, it proves that we're on the right path of what a fly shop should be, And we want that personal interaction with people.
Right.
And we just don't get that on our phones anymore.
What do you guys cover? What is Schultz Outfitters? What area do you guys cover at all of it out there?
Yeah, I mean, we since we don't have an online store, we get a ton of call-ins. Okay, so I mean, we're a destinational fly shop. We travel all over. Okay, Mike's taking groups from Russia to Louisiana to we've gone, you know, like I said, the OP for Steelhead. We've done everything. Okay, and we still continue to do these things. But also all of our local fisheries are covered, everything from the warm water aspect to salmon and steelhead season. So we got the Great Lakes covered. So we're always evolving, and, you know, we're not just focused. We are known as a warm water shop. Smallmouth are in our backyard, and that is Mike's forte. I don't think I know anybody that's caught more 20-inch bass than that guy. Okay. So, nice. You know, it's, you know, and I've learned a lot. You know, I wasn't really a warm water guy, and, you know, I've really changed my tune and to see how impressive some of the stuff is that they have to do, the technological aspect of it. And, you know, it's a nice challenge, but what I'm saying is the shop's extremely well-rounded, and, we love getting that interaction and those hard questions and the hard to find stuff. And, we love seeing it all come together for people.
That's cool. Do you guys, are there any lodges up out? I know there are some lodges. I've been kind of curious about that as far as if somebody wanted to come out to that area, is there much of that, or is it more kind of get a guide and then head out on the river?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to fish local, I think the smart thing is to do it just like that. Most of, you know, the regions around the Great Lakes, unless you're way up north or something like that. I mean, you know, we have those vacation rental by owner now, right? I mean, So you got pretty pristine houses that you can get at any time. But we do. We have some cabins and some things that we are in houses that we refer people to. There's also the crowd of people that just prefer to have everything handled for them. They rent a hotel.
Yeah.
You know, they show up, everything's clean, and, you know, you get picked up to and from. And, you know, it's everybody is different. Every single person that comes through the door is different, you know, that wants to do these kind of things. So you kind of have a little bit of everything to help out there.
That's cool. All right, Greg. Well, you know, I think I feel pretty good about this conversation. I think we definitely got a good background on, you know, on your history. I think maybe down the line, if you're still into it, maybe we'll get you back on to dig more into some of the, you know, some of the specific techniques and tips. But yeah, you know, before we get out here, anything in the next, you know, few months to 6 months, anything new coming out for you we can expect? I guess you got any books or anything you're working on now?
Yes and no. I'll be honest with you. Like, I do have plans to do book number two.
Oh, cool.
And I just don't have a timeline on how I want to approach that yet. But it's going to be sooner than later. I mean, I hate to say it with, you know, everything that's kind of going on in the world right now. You know, if they shut us all down again with COVID, Dave, if I'm stuck home, there'll probably be a book sooner.
All right.
But, and I hope that's not the case, to be honest with you, but, you know, yes and no, you know, yeah. Like, I want to make sure that, like, anything new that comes out of, you know, from me moving forward is exactly what I want it to be.
Nice. What was your first book? What was the title of your first book?
Fusion Fly Tying.
That's right. Fusion Fly Tying. So, okay. Well, anything else before we get out of here? I know we touched on a little bit on steelhead. Did we miss anything as far as, you know, kind of the stuff you have going with your materials? Is there another podcast out there maybe down the line?
No.
You covered it all?
Yeah. I haven't put anything into, like I said, it's, like I didn't see your message. I'm glad that we got a chance to connect, and, I wish I could say I have something hip, new, and exciting coming. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. You just have to wait. And I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you taking the time and letting me talk on your platform. And I hope somebody enjoys it. Maybe laughs a little bit. That's the most important thing. And if you're gonna go steelhead in my neck of the woods, just go and enjoy yourself. You know, the probability of you catching a fish is pretty good.
That's awesome.
And there's some good guys down there that are easy to help. Just give us a call. Call the shop.
Perfect.
Say, I want to go fishing. We'll make sure you go where you need to go.
All right, Greg. Sounds good, man. We'll appreciate you again for taking the time today, and I'll keep in touch with you down the line.
Sounds good, Dave. Thanks so much.
So there you go. If you want to find all the show notes with all the links we covered, just go to wetflyswing.com/176. I would love if you could leave a quick rating and review for the show. You can go to wetflyswing.com/love and leave a quick rating or review. I'd really appreciate that. And I want to thank you in advance if you have a chance to do that. I want to thank you again today for stopping by to check out the show. I'm looking forward to catching up with you soon. Hoping to maybe see you online or on the river.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com. And if you found this episode helpful, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes.